Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan and from Ireland. It's Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
I'm speaking to you from the green filled fields of the Emerald Isle. How are you, Andrew?
I miss you dearly.
You know what? I'm going to say it at the top of the show this time. I think we work best together, and I miss you too, in a professional sense.
No, certainly not in a friendship sense, of course not. Hey, I'm always curious, because it's a bit of a long flight. What did you binge watch anything? Anything you want to recommend?
Yeah, I do, actually. I watched the first two hour-long episodes of a brilliant documentary on Netflix called Bobby Kennedy for President.
Ooh, just put it in my queue.
Basically, it's fantastic, Andrew. I know you're a history guy, but this, it's unbelievable the footage they have. And also, interestingly, like, they have a lot of really good audio tapes of Lyndon Johnson talking about Bobby Kennedy and Bobby Kennedy talking about Lyndon Johnson. It's absolutely fascinating, and it's terribly sad. You see the evolution of the man from a privileged background to become a concerned and genuine worker to improve America. It's stunning, and I'm really enjoying it. So I've got one episode left, which I'm saving. It's so good, I want to save it.
Wow. When do you come home, by the way?
I'm home on Sunday.
Oh, okay. Well, I look forward to it. I'm going to have a whole party waiting at JFK for your arrival. A marching band and everything.
Don't even think that you could round up enough of my friends or your friends to do that. Don't be ridiculous.
Hey, we've got quite a show coming up for you. A little bit of EPL at the top. We want to get into some of the latest news on the World Cup 2026 bid. Big mailbag, at least that's what I hear. And then what to watch for, where we're going to talk a little MLS, because Wayne Rooney could be on his way to the District of Columbia. I'm curious for your take. I have not spoken to you since that news came down, so I'm curious to hear what you have to say about it. But before we get to any of that, we haven't done a show or really spoken since the news about Sir Alex Ferguson came down. Obviously, it seemed like it was touch and go for him at first. It's such a serious thing. And it sounds like, from the latest of what I heard, that he's actually recovering about as well as a person can recover from this.
Yeah, the reports are that he's speaking, he's awake. It's just stunning news. And, you know, it was grim for such a long time there, because, like I said, you don't know with a brain hemorrhage what's going to happen. And, it's good news so far. It was funny. People said things which you would feel trite in the moment, but are actually probably very applicable to this scenario, that he was such a fighter in his career, such a battler, that there was no doubt that he would apply the same qualities to his recovery. And I'm just so pleased, Andrew, that we are talking about the recovery now. And I'd like, on behalf of everyone who's involved in this podcast, namely me and you, just to wish him the very best, because, it just made me so sad to hear about it. Just a week after he presented, less than a week actually, after he presented Arsene Wenger with that little tribute at Old Trafford and made Jose Mourinho join in the most awkward photo in the history of modern man. It was just great to hear that he's on the road to recovery, and we just wish him so. I'll tell you, I couldn't believe how sad I was at hearing that news.
Yeah, I agree. And it was kind of a nice scene today at the London Stadium between Manchester United and West Ham. The fans really turned out to show their support. There were a lot of signs around the stadium, especially in the away end. But David Moyes, of course, West Ham's manager, you know, he was the one who was essentially handpicked by Ferguson to take over at United. He spoke about it, I think, in the match program. He said, "We were all shocked and saddened to hear of the news about Sir Alex. We would like to send our best wishes to Sir Alex and his family. We're all thinking about them, just as the rest of the football world is. We're all behind him and praying for a full recovery. And United's statement that they put out today, yesterday, I think, saying what you said, Sir Alex no longer needs intensive care and will continue rehabilitation as an inpatient. So for something that was really scary on the onset, it seems like the news is actually pretty positive.
Yeah, can I just direct people towards Daniel Taylor of The Guardian and his article on Fergie, which was written in the aftermath of him suffering this brain hemorrhage. You should read it because it's the perspective of a journalist who worked on the Manchester United Northwest Alex Ferguson beat for a few years. And it gives such an insight into the man, all his intricacies, his dark and his light, his temper and his good humor, his fierce reputation and his wholesome generosity. It's one of the best written pieces, and it kind of gives a flavor of the man in the round, which I don't think we always got. You know, we heard all the cliches, Fergie time, all the kind of bust ups with Van Nistelrooy and Beckham and Roy Keane, his arguments with Wenger down through the years. But this really kind of gave a unique perspective on the manager. And as always from Daniel Taylor, it's great football writing. So that's Daniel Taylor in The Guardian on Fergie.
Good stuff, man. So yeah, all the best to him, of course. So the season is pretty much, I can't say that it's over. There is still a little bit left to be decided. Some really important things, of course. And I guess next week would be our real recap. The Devonlings are going to be next week, are they not?
I'm excited about that. Yep, it's going to be the Devonlings next week. And I've already booked Billy Crystal. Billy Crystal is coming out of hosting retirement to do the show. He confirmed it with me. We had Brandy's the other night, so that's good.
I'm excited. I'm excited to meet him. He's very famous. But before we get to that, there were a few teams that the seasons that they've had up to this point have really stood out to me in terms of feelings of confliction, where I feel like you're able to mount an argument that they've been disappointing seasons just as easily as you can mount an argument that they've been successful seasons. So the three teams that I have in mind, I'll go through them one at a time, and I want to hear you tell me if you believe they've had a good season or a bad season. Pretty clear-cut, but not necessarily with clear-cut answers. You ready?
Right.
Okay. I want to start with the team that just confirmed their spot in the top four and a Champions League place for next season, and that is Tottenham. Would you say they had a good season or a bad season?
I think in the context of everything that's going on at the club, I think they've had a good season. I think they had a good run in the Champions League, which should have been extended further. I think the real disappointment in the FA Cup, they can park that. The fact that they're back in the Champions League again is huge in terms of keeping their manager and keeping key players moving into the new stadium. It's important that the club of the stature of Spurs is in the Champions League. I think it's a good season overall, but I would defer to you because obviously you are the man who this matters to most.
Well, I don't know about that, but I agree with you. And I've had a little bit of a roller coaster season with them. Like you say, the FA Cup loss, the way they lost to Juve in the Champions League. But in the end, I think you have to look at it as a good season, especially when you take yourself back to the way this season started. And the way everyone was talking about the Wembley curse. I mean, there were some moments where you really started to wonder, are they going to be able to be successful playing in this building? And in the end, they really were, to the point where, would it surprise you to hear that if Spurs win this weekend, they'll finish with 77 points? Not a given, but it's very possible. They're playing at home against Leicester. So if they finish with 77 points, you know how many points they finished with the year that they battled Leicester for a league title? Just 70. I mean, so, and that was a year where, I mean, everybody, oh, the way Spurs play, it's brilliant, it's beautiful football. I mean, this side, points-wise, has potential to wind up being significantly better. They dealt with injuries throughout the year. They dealt with losing Kyle Walker to Manchester City. Danny Rose, who's supposed to be their marquee left back, really, in the second half of the season, I think he only had four appearances for them, and they still managed to withstand those things. They were strong defensively. Toby Alderweireld is probably out, but Davinson Sanchez looks like he can come in and it won't be that much of a drop-off for the two. So, yes, it was a bit of a roller coaster because the last couple seasons they've been in the title race and they never were this season. But I don't think you can take away from the fact that them finishing in the top four spot, three straight years in the Champions League. It's huge. It's huge that they were able to do that. And I hope Tottenham fans don't take that for granted, because we're not far removed from when just finishing in the Champions League was nothing short of miraculous. I mean, my favorite moment as a Spurs fan was probably that win against City under Harry Redknapp that clinched their first Champions League spot. So, yeah, good season. Good season for them. Next club that I have here, Manchester United. What do you think?
I'm just going to go on the league to begin with, and it has been a good season for them in the league, and it has been a season in which they wrestled away some of the limelight in that amazing comeback victory in the Manchester Derby, which was supposed to be the coronation of their noisy neighbours, but they spoiled the party. That will live long in the memory. What will also live long in the memory is the inconsistency of the team, the inability of the manager to know his solid starting 11, the style of play, which at times has been wretched. But all that said, it's been a good season in the league because they're finishing second, and that's progress. I'm being very kind to them here. Obviously, the Champions League, that's one that's going to stick in the craw. When you see how Sevilla went on to fall to Bayern Munich, and you saw the way they fell to Barcelona in the Copa del Rey final, to think that a Manchester United team so expensively assembled would be so limp in going out to Sevilla. Again, that's another thing that's going to stick in the minds. It doesn't appear as if their manager is going anywhere. He said that his star player, Paul Pogba, he wishes to retain him. There are lots of unanswered questions. There are lots of things that I'm unsure about. I'm not sure the direction in which this Manchester United project under Mourinho is going to end up back where United fans want it to be. But for now, I'm going to give them my thumbs up for the season in that they're finishing a clear second, and they've got a cup final on the way, which I believe they'll win too.
Yeah. I guess mine comes with an asterisk, which is a little unfair. Look, if they win the FA Cup, then I guess you have to look at things maybe a little bit differently, but they haven't yet. Going off of what I've seen so far, I don't know, man. I kind of gauge it as, if you talk to a Manchester United fan, what would they, are they buying the commemorative DVD of the 2017-18 Manchester United season? I don't think so. United fans have been complaining about this team all season long. They don't like the way they play. They were never at really any point involved in a title race. Even in the January window when they went out and spent and brought in Alexis Sanchez, it didn't really change much for them. They never really found the right role for Paul Pogba. They had weird losses. I know you're playing the role of Mr. Positivity, and you're focusing on the City win, which was great and may be our devundling leader in the clubhouse for Game of the Year. But JJ, they also have losses to Brighton, West Brom, Huddersfield. I don't know. I'm leaning towards bad. I don't think United fans are looking back on this season very fondly.
No, they're not. But I'm just going with the overall league finish. And you know my reservations about the future going forward. So, long-term, you're probably right. Short-term, I'm going to stick with what my view on them is.
Okay. Wow. And then last but not least, this is another weird one. Liverpool, good or bad?
I think a good season. I think the shaky kind of early start where they were finding themselves and a couple of results didn't go their way obviously impacted their challenge against a rampant and runaway Manchester City. They were never really in contention for the title, unfortunately, not in the way that they were, say, at Christmas time last season. I think the problem of balancing a team that is really threadbare in a lot of positions, as we can see right now, and the fatigue of fighting on two fronts in Europe and in the league has cost them somewhat and has put them in a little bit more of a precarious position than they should be, as they are. I mean, they're currently now in fourth in the table. I think they're going to finish in the Champions League places. Hopefully they win a Champions League. Then we're going to be talking about an all-time season because, look, Liverpool's greatest victories are written on European soil. So I'm going to go with a good season. I have seen improvement. I've seen, like, individually, they've been just fantastic. I think Bobby Firmino is getting better with every season. I don't need to speak about Mo Salah and that season. There's nothing left to be said. yeah, look, I think it's a good season and I'm feeling good about it. And it's just, I suppose, a shame that we didn't mount more of a title challenge. But even the team that's finishing second can say that.
Right. I went with good also, but I'll tell you what, man, it was, I kind of went back and forth on that. And ultimately, I think, you know, I don't know if they're going to win the Champions League, but any season that results with you even getting to the final of that competition, it's hard for me to look at that season and not say that it's a good season. And I agree with you. I do think when it's all said and done, they are going to finish top four. So regardless of what happens against Real Madrid, I do think they've done enough to be back in the Champions League next season. If we were ranking all the teams in the league this year on in terms of watchability, I know that doesn't really count in the table, but I think it, I do think it means something to fans. They're probably number one in the watchability table. I know they had problems defensively, but between Salah, Firmino, Sadio Mane, they were very fun to follow and to watch this year. And that's with them having lost Philippe Coutinho, which was, at the time, it felt like a huge loss. And I do think there were moments where they felt it. But by and large, they were still very successful, like we saw in European competition. So I do think it's a good season. But they are weird, though. I mean, you can see but why listen, I would waver on that.
Well, sorry to cut across from you, but yeah. I did think at the start of the season they would be weird. I did say that this is going to be an up and down kind of season with a roller coaster ride, and it has proven to be a little less of a roller coaster ride than I thought, but it's not the finished article. The front three is exactly where you want it to be, but you can't say that about the midfield. You can't say it about the center of defense, and you've got two relatively young fullbacks as well who are trying to find their way. So I think it's a good season, all told, and when you add everything in, including the individual awards that have been won by Mo Salah, PFA Player of the Year, Football Writers Player of the Year, which he was given tonight, I believe. And what you've said about watchability, I mean, that counts. Mm-hmm. In
well,
their quiet moments, there's Manchester United. In their quiet moments, there's Manchester United fans who would eat, who would, in, at the drop of a hat, swap that forward line for what they've got.
Oh, yeah, I don't doubt that at all. But they're just weird because, well, for one, they lose the caught offside cup, which is just shocking from what we've seen in previous seasons. But, you know, two draws with West Brom, lost to Swansea, two draws with a pretty average, and that's favorable, Everton side and the Merseyside derby. So I don't know. Yes, they've got 5-0 against Swansea. They got 4-0 with Bournemouth, a 5-0 win with Watford. So there were some really fun games for sure where they just piled it on, the 4-3 over City. But like you said, they just had some weird ones too. So I don't know. The Champions League, that's the tiebreaker. I mean, they've gone that far in that competition, so they can't have had a bad season with going that far in Europe. But it was a little bit weird at times.
I think the criteria that I applied to Manchester United and to Liverpool is kind of similar, and also I suppose to Tottenham in a way as well, Andrew. Like when you're asking yourself, this is season X of a project. Where are they at? That's kind of what, because Klopp and Mourinho are in their jobs a certain amount of time. Where is the team? Is this team developing? And that's one way in which you can say, has this been a good season or a bad season? And that's one way in which I would think for Liverpool, it's been a good season. Yeah. I do feel this is developing towards something better down the line.
Okay. Those were the only three that I picked out, because when I was looking through at all the other clubs, I thought for the most part, everyone, the answer for everyone else is pretty cut and dry. I don't know if there's any other, like the only other one that I was kind of wondering about was Leicester City. If you would say good,
yeah,
or bad.
Me too.
What do you say for them?
I honestly don't know, because I looked at it and I thought league position is pretty solid. They got in a manager to arrest the slide at the start of the season. He definitely straightened the ship. But then there was a lot of very, very poor results after that. You heard of upheaval in the camp. And the manager who, you know, has just come off the back of a 3-1 win, a comprehensive 3-1 win over Arsenal at the weekend, has only just recently received the dreaded vote of confidence. And there's a good chance that player power has once been activated at the King Power Stadium again, where there's unrest in the camp with Claude Puel, and he most likely won't be there at the start of next season. So that all kind of counts against saying this has been a good season. But considering the position they were in, fodder for relegation when Puel came in overall. And look at Vardy and the way he's kind of picked his form up. They've kept Mahrez, although they probably will lose him in the summer. I guess I'm just going to say that it's been a good season.
Yeah.
But a good season with a caveat that it's still not, they're still not in that comfort zone where they have the manager they want going forward and everything is not exactly rosy in the garden.
I guess. I feel like what they did a couple years ago, it just skews our thinking about them so much. Hey, had they not won that title, we look at Leicester and say, wow, they finished ninth this year. Pretty good. Assuming that that is where they wind up finishing. I mean, that by any other measure, that's a good objective for Leicester City to go out and achieve. They're going to finish with more points than what they had a year ago. Like you said, I know they made the manager change and there were some rocky moments, but I don't mean to be demeaning of them, but they're Leicester. Like they're not going to, other than the crazy season that they had two seasons ago, they're not really usually going to just coast through the league. So for it to be all said and done and then finish top half of the table, I don't know. I don't see how you look at it as anything other than good. But you're right. There were some rocky moments in there. But everyone else I look at, like I was wondering about some others. But you know, Crystal Palace, I guess they were one other one that I was going back and forth about. But I think I'd say good, just remembering how bad things started out for them and seeing you know how far they've come. I think you have to look back on this season for them as a pretty positive turnaround that they managed to pull off. So I don't know. Those are the ones that come to mind for me.
Yeah, I can't think of any other ones. It's pretty clear-cut what kind of seasons the other teams have had.
Yeah, okay. So there you go. If you want to weigh in, of course, obviously, at CO Soccer Pod on Twitter, you can do that. And before we get to all of your tweets in the mailbag, I do want to just check in with the latest news on the 2026 World Cup bid for the U.S., Mexico, and Canada, the joint bid. I'm just going to call it the joint bid. Can I do that? I don't want to have to say every time the U.S., Mexico, Canada bid. It's clunky. The joint bid, you know what I'm talking about, right?
I got you.
Okay, so as we've known for quite some time, the only real competition for this bid is going to be coming from Morocco, and that bid was finally made official this past week. Now, here was the like eye-popping part of it, and maybe this is an American brain moment. You can tell me if that's the case. But they revealed that the construction budget for this World Cup proposal is $3 billion. That's to build 9 stadiums and make extensive renovations on 5 already existing stadiums. $3 billion. I looked up what Tottenham's new stadium at White Hart Lane is going to cost. That's roughly €1 billion or pounds, which is over $1 billion. And that's just one stadium. Now, I'm not saying all of the stadiums that are going to be built in Morocco may be palaces or whatever, but $3 billion? For 9 stadiums and extensive renovations on 5 others? All right, good luck. I don't know how you stay under budget on that, but maybe I'm just used to here in the U.S. where you know prices for stadiums because of maybe what land costs and things like that. I don't know if my mind of what a stadium costs is skewed because it's more expensive here. But I saw that and I thought, no way. Who's buying that?
Yeah, but I mean, again, I think you've just answered your own question there. I'm not au fait with construction costs in North Africa. So I can't really weigh in and comment on that. So it's plausible that they could do that.
Now, here's one thing. If you're a fan of the joint bid, like I imagine most, if not all of our listeners would be, then you may like hearing this, that it seems like FIFA is almost arranging the board here so things work out for the American bid to come through. And obviously, Morocco is not thrilled with that. Now, it was just announced today. Morocco was concerned that FIFA was going to allow U.S. territories like American Samoa, places like that, the U.S. Virgin Islands, Guam, Puerto Rico, that those territories that are American territories would be allowed to have a vote for that World Cup. And FIFA has decided just today that they will not block those countries from voting for the 2026 World Cup. So you would imagine all of those votes will go in favor of the joint bid. So obviously the Moroccan committee is not pleased with that. In addition to that, FIFA also determined this week that all host cities for the World Cup must have at least 250,000 people, and all sites must be no more than 90 minutes from a major airport. This would disqualify 2 of Morocco's proposed site cities, one of which is 91 minutes from the Casablanca airport. And that 90-minute number was moved up to 90 minutes this week. And a lot of people think it was done so just to specifically disqualify a certain Moroccan city. There's another city in the Morocco bid that is just under 250,000. So it seems like the pieces are being arranged in a way where FIFA wants the joint bid to come through, the U.S., Mexico, Canada. So I don't know. You have to – looking at things on paper right now, to me, I don't see how the joint bid doesn't come through. Primarily, one of the things FIFA keeps leaning on is this, JJ.
The United States has stadiums.
They love Henry Kissinger's take on this country, that the U.S. has all these state-of-the-art stadiums that are already in place. And the same could be said for Mexico and Canada as well. Whereas this, a lot of construction is going to have to take place in Morocco. So look, on paper, the joint bid is the one that you feel like has the better chance. But then again, I would have said that over the Qatar bid. There were other bids that went in against Russia that I would have said were better than. So on paper, in these things, it doesn't mean blank. It doesn't mean anything. We'll just have to see how the voting goes, but it's a step in the right direction that FIFA is not going to block the U.S. governed territories from being able to vote. So, it's going to be nerve-wracking, this process. I think we'll know, what is it, June 13th?
I think it's going to be 2 days prior to the start of the World Cup.
Yeah. So we should know fairly soon if this is going to come through or not. Man, I hope it does. We need it, right? We're in need of this morale boost right now, soccer in this country, and that would be a nice little spark, I would say. So we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, it's we've got former France international Lilian Thuram, according to The Guardian, is a supporter of the Morocco 2026 bid, and he's been having a go at the president for weighing in last week in tweets about the bid, and I don't, I mean. I honestly think that, I mean, that obviously wasn't necessarily helpful to the United States bid, but I think with those stipulations that FIFA have inserted, you know, I would agree with you that, it seems to me to be clear they want to sway this bid. And look, from the vantage point of view, let's be honest, there's always been FIFA's concern. The joint bid is far ahead of Morocco, and I mean, allowing the U.S. territories like Guam and Puerto Rico to have a vote is more than a little bit strange.
Yeah, and look, none of this is me saying that I don't think Morocco deserves a World Cup. I'm not saying those things, and I think it'd be great for the African continent to get another World Cup in the near future. But I live in the United States, and I'm rooting for this country to get a World Cup. So we'll keep a close eye on what's happening with that. Mailbag time. What do you got?
CO Soccer Pod and CaughtOffsidePod@gmail.com. We're going to start off with Ali Mickle. Hey, JJ and Andrew. I love the pod. I'm a lifelong Liverpool fan from Atlanta, Georgia, and I'm wondering if you have any suggestions for a cool Liverpool bar to watch in Washington, D.C. I'm going to be visiting some friends during Memorial Day weekend who aren't big soccer fans. I know they're lame. I'm in the process of finding new and cooler friends, but for now, I got to stick with what I've got. Anyway, I'd love to watch the Champions League final in an atmosphere with some other LFC fans. Any thoughts? Thank you. Have safe travels to Kiev. You'll never walk alone. So I did a little bit of research for Ali, and the Queen Vic British Pub in Washington, D.C. is Liverpool supporters bar, and Courthouse Social in Arlington, Virginia is another option for Ali. I'm just wondering, Andrew, what is your favorite outside of your living room venue to watch soccer?
You mean what, bar?
Well, yeah, but no, that's venue. Give me, because, you know, there's like Studio Square in Queens.
Oh, well, yeah, that was
well.
That place is awesome. That was where I watched the European Championship final when Spain beat Italy. That place is really cool when they put up the screen back there in the beer garden. What are some other ones? I went to Zoom Schneider's, I think, in Manhattan for when Spain played Germany in the 2008 European Championship final. It was like a German bar. That was cool. Baker Street is enough. See, I feel bad that all of these that we're giving are just New York City ones because that's where we live. But I've been to Baker Street a bunch of times. I really like that place. Obviously, Nevada Smith's is the famous one. But I don't know. In New York, man, there's a lot. Like, how many? I've been to Jack Dempsey's any number of times. That was where I saw the Landon Donovan goal. That's where you and I went for USA Germany in the last World Cup. I've been there for Gold Cup games. So, yeah, I don't know. There's a whole bunch. Whole bunch of good ones.
Rob Righthand. Hi, JJ and Andrew. A big fan of the pod. Been listening for over a year, and I love your balanced input between the American brain in all of us to the stingy, pessimistic, belligerent Irishman who can't help but shoot down every Pulisic-piloted plane when we know we need it. That, I mean, that's not fair. I'm not like that. Not really. I mean, I'm just, I don't know, I'm kind of insulted by that. As a half-Mexican, half-American Manchester United and New York Red Bull fan, ugh, I know all too well when one team seems on the verge of winning it all. Mourinho in first place to start the season with the Red Bulls, simultaneously winning the Supporters' Shield, entering the playoffs, then to see it all come crashing down. Why, oh why, De Bruyne, Giovinco, Aguero and Altidore. I mean, that's just rambling nonsense. He's trying to conflate the two things there. United were never in a title race. Anyway, my roommate actually has a podcast where she and her co-host discuss other podcasts. You should definitely check it out as they're interviewing me soon to talk all about sports podcasts, and I will definitely be bringing up your pod.
Oh, yeah.
Do You Even Podcast? Do You Even Podcast is the name of the podcast. Okay. Other podcasts are available. I am going to be bringing up one of my favorite things you guys do on a weekly basis, which is the red card and man of the match. I was jotting down some of my favorites, mainly the crazy Greek owner who charged onto the field with a firearm, and I was wondering what some of your favorite red cards and man of the matches have been. What do you think, Andrew?
Some
of our favorite red card man of the match segments?
Well, here's what I did. I'm having a really hard time remembering what my favorites would be. But I went back.
We do it every week, so it's tough.
Right. And one day we got to look back and see how many shows we've actually done. But I've kept a lot of our shows on record, like in an archive. And so I went back. Now, unfortunately, I couldn't find from the first one, but it went back. What I was able to find was as far back as the first show we did in 2015. So it was, I went back to January 6th of 2015. To see what our red card and man of the match were that day. I'm not saying this is my favorite, but I thought I'd get in like a time machine and remember. Here was my red card and man of the match. I don't have yours, sadly. My red card was to Wojciech Szczęsny because he was caught lighting up a cigarette and smoking it in the shower following Arsenal's 2-0 loss to Southampton. Reportedly enraged, Arsene Wenger went off, and Szczęsny was fined a little over $30,000 for doing that, which I thought was very funny. He was then not on the bench for Arsenal's 2-0 win versus Hull in the third round of the FA Cup. And then my man of the match was Fernando Torres, because this was when he re-signed back with Atletico Madrid, and 45,000 fans showed up at the Calderon to welcome him back. So on January 6th of 2015, those were my red cards and man of the match.
Yeah, I was just thinking back on it, and one of my favorites was the Yaya Toure drink driving excuse, where he accidentally took alcohol and then was done for drink driving. He didn't know he was drinking alcohol, which was
it can happen.
Kind of hilarious. Yeah, yeah. And I also kind of like the ones we do whenever there's like something kind of charitable that happens where a club reaches out and kind of, you know, does something in the community. That's pretty cool. But guys, if you can remember any really great ones, because I, like you, Andrew, I'm struggling because we do it every week. That's a lot.
No, it's crazy.
Of red cards, man of the match. And you know what? Some of them don't mean as much as others.
I know you've given a red card to Sepp Blatter probably five or six times. I feel like Mourinho's gotten a lot of red cards. Those are definitely some repeat offenders.
You had a long-standing vendetta against Mark Wilmots, the former Belgian manager.
Right.
He may have got a red card like three or four times from you.
You're definitely right.
It's a good question. It's a good question, Rob. So if you guys out there can remember some man of the matches, red cards that you like, tweet us at COSoccerPod or CaughtOffsidePod@gmail.com. John Ibaneth. Hey, guys, love the pod and love your bickering about the beautiful game. My question is this. Since when do continents make bids to host the World Cup? Politically, I understand why we included Canada and Mexico in the bid, but practically speaking, this seems like a drawback. One of the difficulties with American sports leagues is the travel across the massive country of ours on a weekly basis or less. If our bid is accepted, we're going to be adding two more massive countries into the mix in a one-month consolidated tournament. It just seems impractical. It also seems like this would discourage fans from following teams or attending multiple games due to the potential of having to travel across an entire continent. John, I'm totally with you on that. When this bid came out or was mooted originally, I was against it. And while I'm not against it now, because I want America to have a World Cup on its soil, and Canada and Mexico for that part, I think it's really not, it's not going to be fan friendly. And I know there's a lot of other World Cups, like there's going to be huge travel issues in Russia. There were huge travel issues at Poland and the Ukraine in 2012 for the European Championships. I get that, but this is going to be, this is going to be deeply unfan friendly. And
Brazil,
I don't like
also
that element
there,
of it.
There were huge travel issues in Brazil too, with the games being played in the rainforest in Manaus. I mean, any big country, like, I understand he's not wrong in saying what he said, but it, I don't think we should act like this is unprecedented. Like you said, once Russia hosts a World Cup, then, okay, what does Russia have, like 12 time zones? I mean, it's massive. Yeah, I don't know, man. I totally understand it, and I understand why fans would maybe be a little bit nervous and apprehensive about it, but it's not without precedent. We've seen other World Cups before where travel has been a pretty big undertaking.
Yeah, to be honest with you, I've got to say that I heard an idea muted on a I think it was on a WhatsApp group that I'm in, where someone suggested just have the World Cup in Germany every single year. It's perfect for it. It's just the right element of travel and stadia and everything. And I'm all for that. Sean Oluweto, hey guys, your pod is awesome. You guys gave me Manchester City as a club in Help a Fan 2 years ago. Wow. And I cannot thank you enough. Wanted your guys' take on something. I watched El Clasico today, and the announcer on BN is terrible. I think his name is Ray Hudson, and he is probably the worst person I have ever heard call a game. Half the time, what he says does not make any sense. I am all for enthusiasm with commentary, but he is ridiculous. Am I just a grump for thinking this? Do you guys like him or hate him like me? Let me know your thoughts. Thanks, and keep up the great work.
It's cool.
Andrew,
the bomb disposal expert on the run.
He's out of his mind.
Andrew, your thoughts?
No, he's a crazy person. I would say we have, what would you say, JJ, a love-hate relationship with him? Like, his calls are ridiculous, and he makes the game about himself just as much as it is about the action, which, personally, I don't think that's what a broadcaster is there to do. But he's also, like, you have to at least smile when you're listening to him, right? Like, I hope people don't take him so seriously that it actually, like, truly bothers them. He's trying to have fun.
Silicon chip with legs and covered with eyes.
He's a lunatic.
Bonkers. The way I would put it is that I wasn't a massive fan, and then I kind of just embraced it. This is what he does. And if you just let go and listen to what he's saying, and like, I still imagine a silicon chip with eyes and legs, and it's so weird and out there. It's hilarious. I've come round to him, but I guess why you have reservations. What I would say is stick with him and see how you feel after another season on BN Sports. Nick Pearman. Hi guys, started listening to the podcast last year and now listen every week. I'm an Ipswich Town fan in the UK and wanted to hear your thoughts on Cameron Carter-Vickers. We've had him on loan for the second half of the season and I've been really impressed. Reads the game well and just an all-round solid defender and built like a tank. He has a lot of potential. Do you think he could break into the Spurs first team picture next season? Was just interested to hear your thoughts on him. Keep up the good work. Your podcasts make the commute to work much more enjoyable. Andrew.
Here's what I would say about him. The fact that they've sent him on loan again and then went out and signed not one, but two center backs. Remember, it wasn't just Davinson Sanchez that Tottenham signed. Also Juan Foyth. Now, I have no idea what Foyth's role is going to be going forward for Tottenham. He didn't really see much time other than in some of the smaller cup competitions. But I don't think that bodes all that well for Cameron Carter-Vickers. He's only 20 years old, but Davinson Sanchez, I think, is only 21. I feel like if Carter Vickers was going to be a player that Tottenham was really ready to build a future around, then I just feel like you would have seen him in a Spurs uniform more than what you've seen already. He's made some limited appearances in like League Cup matches. But I don't know. I've been hearing his name for a number of years now. He's been a really highly thought of prospect for a while. But it hasn't come to fruition for him in a Tottenham uniform. Now, I've heard that his loan spell went pretty well, so maybe that's a good sign. And if Alderweireld leaves and they weren't impressed with what they saw from Foyth, then you need another center back on the roster, so maybe he'll be recalled. Injuries always happen, and then maybe they'll be ready for him to step in and be that guy. But I don't know. When I saw them sign two center halves last summer, I thought, uh-oh, that doesn't bode well for the 20-year-old American. So, yeah, I'm not sure. I'm really not sure what his future is in terms of being a Tottenham player.
All I'd say about him is this. I saw him on loan at Sheffield United, I believe, Andrew, and I was reasonably impressed with him. And then I heard that Pochettino wasn't happy with his development, and then he went on loan again to Ipswich Town. And I kind of tend to agree with you. I don't see him breaking in to the Spurs first team, but that doesn't mean he can't carve out a good future in the English top flight for himself. One major thing is Ipswich Town have just got rid of, well, they didn't get rid of, he resigned early. He said he was leaving at the end of the season, but Mick McCarthy is no longer their manager, and Mick McCarthy would have been a great mentor for him as a centre-back because Mick McCarthy played in that position himself and was pretty good at it. So I think if he is to do another season at Ipswich Town, it's a real shame he's not working for a prolonged spell under Mick McCarthy. But I don't know. And also, I don't think the fact that he's built like a tank is necessarily a good thing. That's the one comment everybody says about him. But I'd sooner he was more lean and mobile rather than have the massive kind of wrestler-style arms that he has. Anyway, Dan Appleman. Hey, guys. Started listening to the pod 3 years ago while in Portland, Oregon, and have continued to where I currently live in the Ukraine.
Whoa.
Really love the show. The banter is great. It's like you are in my head. Oh, that's not good. As an American who largely grew up overseas playing and watching soccer, I can relate to both of your points of view. I do still have my American brain and often wondered if they really liked me. Andrew, hit the Sally Field voice.
The answer is they
very
don't.
Much appreciate,
by the way.
I very much appreciate JJ's purism and playing experience mixed with Andrew's fan base yet knowledgeable analysis of the game. This is so complimentary. JJ, this email is mostly to you to let you know that despite Andrew's claims that you will be alone in Kiev, you will not. I will be in Kiev on the 26th and 27th of May. As I said, I currently live in the Ukraine where I work as a Peace Corps volunteer in the Odessa region. I will be in Kiev to finish my service on May 30th, but decided to come into town early, at least to be near the action. Unfortunately, I did not win the lottery for non-supporters tickets, so I will not be attending the game. However, if for some reason you want to grab a pint at any point before or after the game, it will be on me. Thank you very much, Dan Appleman. What a nice email to end the mailbag. But one thing left, Andrew.
Okay.
Friend of the show and friend of mine, a wonderful fullback, Niall Cunningham. He wanted me to mention this. Newry City have been promoted to the Irish Premier League this week. That's four promotions in 5 years.
Wow.
For Newry City. They won the playoff 6-3 over two legs. So Newry City back from the ashes. Four promotions in 5 years. That's incredible. Well done to everybody at the County Down Club. And congratulations to Chunky for supporting them.
And now they get to take on the Dundalk. I look forward to those matchups very much.
No.
Yeah.
No, yep. You've got it wrong. The Irish League is the Northern Irish League, Andrew. The League of Ireland is the Southern League. Once again, you've got the complicated geopolitical situation for soccer in Ireland wrong. And now I'm embarrassed and I can't go on.
Newry City Dundalk should be a lot of fun. Looking forward to it. Let's see what to watch for.
Yes,
Sunday, 10 a.m. There's really not a ton to go through in the Premier League because most of it has been decided, but there is a little bit left. All these games obviously at 10 a.m. last weekend of the season. Liverpool and Brighton, a draw will do it for Liverpool thanks to their major goal differential advantage. And then Newcastle and Chelsea. Chelsea, obviously, they need to win, and Liverpool need to lose. It's pretty clear cut. So what do you think? Is this going to be Antonio Conte's last match for Chelsea?
Like I said earlier, he's just been resigned to his fate. I genuinely feel as if that's it for him. It would be un-Chelsea-like for him to do another season.
Yeah. And then I'll put this in there because it's not technically settled yet, but Southampton will host Manchester City and Swansea will host Stoke. It's a goal differential of 9 that Swansea are going to have to turn around. It's probably not going to happen. However, I will say if it was going to, this is kind of the matchups that you would need, right? Manchester City scores more than everyone, and Swansea are playing Stoke, who are bottom of the table. But having said that, I mean, there's no way. There's no way. So, but I included it just because it's not 100% official yet. But if you're desperate to search for things that are worth watching, then there you go. Those are your that will officially settle the relegation fight. MLS, Saturday, 7:30 p.m., the Columbus Crew and the Chicago Fire. The Crew, JJ, they continue to perform pretty admirably in the face of what was going to be kind of an uncertain season for them. I would think Crew fans are generally pleased right now. They sit fourth in the East, 18 points. Now, they have played more than anyone, but it was, I don't know, this was always going to be kind of an uncertain year for them. So the fact that they're getting a bunch of positive results, I think Crew fans should be at least happy with what's happening on the field. I can't speak to what's going on off of it.
Well, you never know. I mean, it may have had, at least for the players, a galvanizing effect.
Yeah, that could very well be. The Fire, meanwhile, they've been one of these teams that have been rumored about Fernando Torres. I don't know what the situation is with that, if that's imminent, what's going to be happening. He's been rumored with several teams. I saw the Montreal Impact were one of them, but Remy Gard has kind of told people to maybe remove that from their minds, at least for the time being. If that's to happen, do you like the idea of Fernando Torres in MLS?
Well, the rumors in England today were that he would do a final stint in the English Premier League with a number of Premier League teams interested. If that's the case, Torres will be in the Premier League. I'm pretty certain of that. Do I like him for MLS? I don't know, Andrew. I mean, I'm a big fan of him as a player. So, you know, a chance to see him play in my backyard sounds great. I don't know what's his fitness state of play with that. That kind of, to me, he's a good enough player, even at, you know, 34 years of age, to make an impact in MLS. But whether he's durable enough for a league, which I contend is pretty physical. Mm-hmm. Look, there's going to be gaps for him. There's going to be plenty of breakaways where he can be one-on-one with the goalkeeper. I know he's not quite as quick as he used to be. I still think he could have an impact in MLS, but what's his fitness like?
Yeah.
Where is that at? And that would be the major concern for me with him. Otherwise, I wouldn't say he's too old for MLS. I haven't seen him. Well, nobody has seen him play consistently enough, like where he'd be a starter with any club. We just haven't seen that from his time at Atletico Madrid of late to know whether he is able and durable enough for MLS, but I kind of like it.
Well, Jeff Carlisle had a story a couple days ago where the talks between him and Chicago Fire are in doubt, so I don't know. It seems kind of up for grabs right now as to what's going to happen, but the rumor is out there, and it's been out there for quite some time, so we've found oftentimes with MLS that when those rumors are there long enough, it's kind of where there's smoke, there's fire, and a lot of these do wind up happening, like Wayne Rooney. As I mentioned now, that this Saturday, 9 o'clock, Real Salt Lake and DC United. And guess who it looks like is coming to Washington? That's right, JJ. Mr. Hair Plugs himself, Wayne Rooney. What do you think of this? I have some thoughts.
So personally, like from a playing standpoint, like I don't get it. But from like a marketing standpoint of a team that's like moving into a new stadium very soon and needs a bit of buzz about it, needs to sell jerseys, needs to put bums on seats. It makes sense. But from a purely playing standpoint, I don't see what they're getting. They're not getting a guy who's coming off even, you know, a half-decent season in England. His move back to his boyhood club hasn't worked out. When he has played, he's looked slow. He looks like as if, you know, to coin the old phrase that old pros use, his legs have gone. I'm not sure for the money they're talking about that they're getting bang for their buck. Now, we never know how MLS transfers are made, who's paying for what. But instinctively, I don't like this.
I understand that. However, I think I come at it from a different point of view. I think I kind of like it. I understand the direction that MLS wants to be going right now, getting younger players who are on their way to Europe rather than older players who are on their way back from Europe. I do get that. But what if the production is kind of the same? Like a young player who's in MLS from the ages of like 21, 22, 23 may provide the same thing. And then he leaves for Europe. Maybe that's the same level of production that's provided by a guy who's 32, 33, 34, and then retires. I mean, when you look at a lot of these marquee European names, obviously we remember the ones that didn't really work, like Gerrard. But like overall, JJ, wouldn't you say more often than not, these guys do wind up being at least some level of a success? I mean, Robbie Keane is one of the best players in MLS history. David Villa is one of the best players in MLS history. Schweinsteiger has been good. Kaká, unfortunately, was kind of undone with injuries, but when he was healthy, he was really good. The same would be said for Lampard. Pirlo was kind of a flame out, but
Lampard was a disaster.
Because of injuries.
Pirlo,
who people say was also a terrible player, he still had a season of what, 11 assists 1 year for NYCFC, which if another guy does that, we say, oh, that guy had a decent year. But you know, I'm just saying that a lot of times these guys that come over from Europe, they actually wind up not being total disasters. A lot of these guys wind up being pretty good players.
I don't in front of me, but for the most part, I mean, you just don't see the best of them. And especially when you look at what Atlanta is doing in trying to bring in young players from South America. I know what the marketing man thinks about this move for DC United. But like on the field, I just can't see Rooney giving anything to DC United that's going to, I don't know. I don't see him make them better. I really don't. I honestly think I think he's done.
Wow.
I really do.
Oh, my goodness. I'm going to remember this. We're going to see. We're going to track this. Let's see. Saturday, 7:30, New England Revolution and Toronto FC. Toronto lost again yesterday to Seattle at home in an MLS Cup final rematch, 2-1 to Seattle. It's starting to get kind of bad now for Toronto on the field. And then even off of it, Jozy Altidore is facing 4 to 6 weeks out with a foot injury. And, JJ, when I saw that, I could only think of one thing. Can you imagine if the U.S. had qualified for the World Cup? 4 to 6 weeks from now is pretty much exactly when the World Cup starts. This is just like, it would have been the most Jozy Altidore thing ever. Well, another World Cup on the horizon where he's coming off an injury. What do they do? Do they put him on the roster? Do they not? I feel even angrier now that the U.S. aren't going because we're robbed of what would have been such good fodder to talk about leading up. It's almost a shame.
Maybe it's because it's a late hour here in Ireland, but that is the most annoying thing you've said to me in forever.
Oh, okay.
You are imagining a future where we qualified, and you're imagining one of our key players having an injury. This is what you're doing.
And
I'm imagining
the shows that we would have done and how fun the debate would have been. And it's just reason 10,342 as to why it sucks that the U.S. didn't qualify for this World Cup. But, sad.
Being able to debate Jozy Altidore in a boot heading into a World Cup is not the reason that springs to mind why I'm sad that the United States didn't make it.
No, that's why it's in the 10,000s. There's many other reasons ahead of it. It's lower down, but it is a reason. Let's see, Sunday.
You're
at 8,
a weird guy.
Sunday at 8:30 p.m., LAFC and NYCFC. I like this matchup. NYCFC got it handed to him, my friend. Oof, in the New York Derby. 4-0. New York is red.
Oh, Andrew, that was an absolute hammering. What a thumping. Like, I know Bradley Wright Phillips pretty much owns NYCFC. They're going to have to go to Sheikh Mansour's office and put up shareholder in NYCFC, Bradley Wright Phillips, because it's not been funny what he's done to this team. And generally speaking, apart from a couple of results, I mean, the Red Bulls have absolutely owned this rivalry. But even still, I couldn't believe the NYCFC defending. It was just so terrible. I mean, it's got to be an eternal frustration to Patrick Vieira that a team that's managed by him can turn in defensive performances like that. Yeah. Oh, my God.
We are rapidly approaching the hour mark, which we turn into pumpkins at that point. So I'm going to breeze through the rest of this. Bundesliga, Champions League spots still on the line. Saturday, all of these at 9:30 a.m., Bayer Leverkusen and Hannover 96. Now, Leverkusen are technically, they're fifth right now, but they're tied on points for that all-important fourth spot with Hoffenheim. In terms of the matchup, Hannover are 13th in the table, so not a bad matchup for Leverkusen. Meanwhile, Hoffenheim are taking on Borussia Dortmund. A result of any kind will get Dortmund in. If they lose, they're probably still okay unless they lose and Leverkusen make up a goal differential of 6. And by the way, RB Leipzig still do have a shot. They need to win. They need both Hoffenheim and Leverkusen to lose. So it's possible. But that's what you got going on in the Bundesliga with Champions League spots. And then Serie A, the title could be wrapped up this weekend. Juventus are at the Stadio Olimpico against Roma Sunday at 2:45, and Sampdoria are hosting Napoli. And the gap right now is 6 right now, so a point of any kind would seal it. It's probably sealed already with the goal difference being what it is. And it, so Juve will probably be marching on to yet another Scudetto. So that's what you got, my friend.
Yeah, Napoli president Aurelio De Laurentiis wants Maurizio Sarri to stay at the club and is going to sit down with him next week to talk about the future. We have not done enough on Sarri, Andrew. He is just a fascinating character. We could do a Sarri podcast.
Oh, wow. I look forward to that podcast. I think it'll be a lot of fun. I'm going to start studying up on him now. But hey, this has been a lot of fun as well. To everyone who listened, thank you. We got another podcast out where we look at some of the midweek games in the Premier League. Also a big red card and man of the match in that one. I'm going to head to JFK right now. I'm going to camp out outside your gate and just patiently wait for you to come home like a dog after their owner goes to work. That's me right now with you out of the country. That's how I feel. Isn't that beautiful? Man's best friend.
What a creepy image to end the podcast on.
Well, hey, to you I say...
Take you later, fun boy.
I'll see you later, man.
Bye, man.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.